Hello and welcome to Out of the Frame, conversations about photography. I'm Pia Johnson, your host, and this podcast features conversations about photography, creativity, and the world we live in. I'll be talking to other photographers, curators, academics, and researchers about their work, artistic process, and how they feel about contemporary photography today. Today's episode of Out of the Frame, Conversations About Photography, was recorded on the lands of the Dja Dja Wurrung country. I'd like to acknowledge traditional owners of the land that we live, work, create and thrive on, the people of the Kulin Nation. I pay respects to their elders past and present. It always was and always will be Aboriginal land. My guest today is Sarah Anderson. With a love of visual stories, Sarah's experience spans across food and beverage, interiors and architecture. A practical problem solver, Sarah helps clients bring their work to life, always aiming to understand and capture the story behind the shot. She empowers clients to feel confident that their projects can speak for themselves, that their end product can connect and visually delight. Sarah's passion for eco-businesses filters through her work, from capturing the story of startups and small family-run businesses to working closely with sustainable architecture and design. She is always wanting to support ethical businesses. Returning back to her home city of Geelong after many years in Melbourne, Sarah continues her experience working around Geelong, the Bellarine Peninsula and the Surf Coast. Beyond collaborating with clients, Sarah also runs The Weekend Works with Zoe Hodgins, achieving a long-burning desire to fuse her love of photography with art that sparks conversations about environmental impact and what the future holds. Alongside her photography practice, Sarah occasionally teaches photography at RMIT. Outside her work, she is obsessed with gardening and loves going hiking and camping with her partner and two young children. Hi, Sarah. Thanks so much for joining me tonight. I thought we might start by you letting us know how you got into photography.
To be honest, I don't really know. I always wanted to do photography. Don't know where that came from, but as young as I can remember, I did not think it was a job when I was in primary school. But then when I started high school, my parents took me to visit my uncle's studio and he is a photographer. And I realized it was a job. So kind of got me thinking that that could be my job. And then a bit later in high school, my parents, like I wanted to get a job at a supermarket and my parents said, no, if you want to get a job, it's in photography or no job. So I ended up hassling a mum of a classmate who I knew was a photographer to give me some work. And eventually she did. And so I worked for her and my parents also asked the school if I could do photography as year 11 and 12 subjects, even though it didn't exist. And the art teacher accommodated that. So he got another photographer in as well. So I went and did work experience with her. I asked her to be my mentor and she helped me. I went on shoots with her and she helped me prepare my folio for RMIT because back then you had to have a pretty good folio to get in. So she helped me with the darkroom printing and taught me lots of stuff like that. So that was really amazing. So it's kind of really that start, but I don't know how as a small child I decided that that's what I wanted to do.
Wow. I find it amazing that your parents were so supportive, you know,
so supportive.
Lots of different stories, but they clearly saw that you loved it and that you were good at it and you just, you know, had to do it in a way.
Yeah. So they let me build a dark room at home above the garage and they were extremely supportive. Dad, this was in the 90s when Photoshop was very new. So he enrolled me in the TAFE in a Photoshop course and they enrolled me in a photography course at TAFE. So they were, anything me and my sister were into, they basically just helped with, which was awesome, and didn't ever tell us we should have a different job, I suppose. They just were like, if you're into it, that's cool. That's what you can do.
Yeah, wow. How wonderful. That's so lovely to hear. And then you got into RMIT. You did the bachelor?
Yeah. So I ended up getting into, so I applied for every course I could find. My uncle introduced me to Sally Brownbill. She helped me prepare as well. And then I ended up getting into RMIT along with all the other courses, but RMIT was the one that I wanted to do, of course. So, which I guess had the best reputation and had more kind of a commercial focus, which was important to me as well. So, yeah, so then I did RMIT for 3 years and back in the day of film, which was expensive and fun.
Yeah.
And then
so different to digital, isn't it? Like
so different. So yeah, it was all film, darkroom, printing. It was just the beginning stages of digital cameras being sort of commercially viable, I guess, and not many people had them. And scanning and digital printing was also just becoming viable. So it was a real mix of darkroom and the beginning of digital, I guess. Which was good to have a bit of both.
Yeah. Do you think that's really influenced the way you either photograph or print or even thinking about editing images?
Yeah, I think
images?
So. I think so. Like the darkroom printing was really valuable, I think. Like it was very time consuming, but we had this amazing teacher who would just sit outside the darkroom and we'd all be in there and you'd do your process that took 15 minutes. So you'd do an experiment, come out, show her, give you feedback, go back in, change it, do it again. So you might spend, I don't know, 6 or 8 hours on one print. And she just really helped with contrast and balance and exposure and just getting it really right. So getting like learning really deeply how to correctly expose in the first place and then process your film and then the darkroom printing, I think really helped translate to digital to spend that time and understand what's going on because it all really does translate. And I think it was just so much time spent on it and so much time spent on the printing, which is also a really important part sort of. And then now you've got Photoshop, but you kind of did a lot of that stuff in the darkroom with exposure and contrast and burning and dodging. And obviously it was way more time consuming, but just really looking at images and seeing what you want to do, I suppose, and visualizing stuff because you also, I guess, on film was a mystery. You can't be on the shoot going, oh, yeah, like I'm just going to change this or that. You had to really imagine what it was going to look like beforehand and then you'd find out a few days later.
Yeah, okay. And do you think you do that, say, if you're prepping a shoot now, do you think you try and visualize or come up with that kind of strong idea as pre-production kind of prep?
Always, 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 always. I always plan my lighting. I mean, like it's so important, like getting on the same page as a client or if you're creating art, like having a plan so you have everything that you need to execute it. So obviously there's all the details of like what are people going to wear if it's people or props or backgrounds and colors and things, but then lights and things like that so that you have everything on hand. So if you don't do that pre-planning process, you may not be able to do what you want to do on set. I also feel like you get a better result. Even if you're on set and you change your mind, you're kind of starting somewhere where you've pre-thought about it. And I think you just get better results. And then I guess you've got to get on the same page as your client. So if you're planning and looking at images and things, you can kind of you're interpreting what your client wants. So then you show them things and you're like, this is what I'm thinking. Is this what you're thinking? Or if you're having ideas that they can't visualize because they're not visual people, you can kind of show them something to sort of confirm that they're going to be happy with what you're doing on the day.
So are most of your clients commercial clients? Is that kind of the main part of your practice?
Yes. Yeah. All commercial clients. I used to, when I started, I worked on weddings. And it is not my bag. I prefer commercial clients. It's kind of like you're producing something, they're used to it, it's the expected outcome and you kind of do it. So, yeah, I probably would love to do more art, but, yeah, all commercial based. So,
yeah. When I first met you, though, I remember that you were doing some work for the Herald Weekly Times.
Oh, yeah. Yep. No, that was a brief period in time, but I am not cut out for photojournalism.
Can I ask why?
I think at the moment, like I was shooting a lot of fluff for them, like stories of cute houses and cute farms and cute animals. And that was awesome. And I love that kind of stuff. But they sent me on a job to photograph a bunch of people that were losing their job at a big company, and they didn't want to talk and they didn't want to be photographed because it was in a time where they were deciding who else they were going to fire. They're going to lay off heaps and heaps of people. And then we were meant to be taking their photos and they're all stressed about it. And I'm like, oh, I've got to kind of like surprise these people out the front of their work to get their photographs, and they don't want to be photographed and they don't want to talk because they don't want to lose their job. And I guess it's really important to share news, and photojournalism is really important, but I just felt so uncomfortable photographing people against their will. And I don't think that photojournalism shouldn't happen. I just feel like I'm not the right personality.
Totally. I get that too. I mean, it's interesting when you said weddings are not your bag. I feel exactly the same. I'm not a wedding photographer. And I remember really early on kind of going, that's not my thing. I don't need that stress in my life. But also too, I think for me, I remember, meeting you at that period, but also just thinking of the long hours and the kind of like search for story and, you know, all the, as you're saying, like chasing it. And I think you do have to have a really particular personality for those types of photojournalism jobs. Obviously long editorial is a different thing again, but I wonder, is it about that control that you talked about earlier, you know, having everything organized, having the plan that you like?
I like that. And I get way better results. I like having the plan. And I actually like the editorial stories. It's just you don't get paid. And I can't afford to work and not get paid at this point in my life. So, yeah.
Totally. So what are the things that you probably photograph the most then in terms of your commercial clients?
I do architecture interiors and products, I guess, like a lot of booze at the moment randomly. But so it's like studio products, people's buildings. Another thing I do a lot of, which I don't ever really put out there, is a lot of corporate stuff. So like corporate portraits and things for businesses, which I
like
kind
for
of
annual reports or marketing.
Not
like
really
websites
for annual
reports.
It's like, yeah, for marketing websites. And I don't know, like, I don't know if many people shoot annual report things anymore. I know it used to be a big job shooting annual reports, but I feel like people don't spend that kind of money on them now. There used to be like a beautiful book with photos and things. And maybe that still happens in some areas, but I think they just generally get marketing images and they want to have like a stock library of stuff to use on hand. And then a lot of corporate portraits and things like that. So, but I feel like the corporate portrait stuff kind of just comes through word of mouth and is a bit off brand, I guess, compared to my other stuff. And I feel like,
okay. So do you feel like you kind of keep them slightly separate in a way?
I keep them visually separate. So I don't have it on my website. It's hidden on my website. So I can send it to people if they want to see stuff. I find weirdly with corporate stuff, people will just ask you and they'll move companies and it kind of just happens through word of mouth. And then also I feel like if it looks like you do everything, it doesn't. I think if you want to advertise your business, you don't want to look like you just do everything. You want to look like you specialize in stuff.
Yeah. Interesting. That's really, it's a particular way of thinking. I remember getting to a point where I was like, I do a lot of fine art stuff and then I have a really niche portrait theater kind of base. And I was like, I do not know how to marry these together. But I just decided, I think also partly out of economics, I was like, I just want to pay for like one website and one, you know, like just, so I threw it all together. And I think I found an interesting balance now. But I think you're right about word of mouth. I think people tend to ask around, they find you, they look at your website, and if they sort of gel or think that you've, you know, maybe you've got the same values as them, going back to that thing of what you like doing or the energy that you're presenting on your website, and then they kind of ask. And as you say, corporate clients tend to go, what else can you do? Or would you be able to do this job because we knew you did the last job really well, even if it was totally different?
And I find they don't even look at my website really. Like, it's like they'll just ask someone and they'll be like, yeah, there's a photographer, give them a call. Like you're a bit more of a commodity in a way and obviously doing a good job and then you come back. But, yeah, I would say they wouldn't know what I do because they wouldn't look at my website.
I think I follow a lot of different photographers on social media and kind of sometimes dip in and out. And it is really interesting to see how people present themselves on websites or on social media even. But do you think it is for you about that client relationship? That's like obviously taking the photos is really important, but do you think that repeat kind of client is where you build the relationships and then get further work?
Yeah, definitely. I am the slackest at promoting myself, and it's literally all word of mouth. And I think, I mean, taking good photos is a big part of it, but lots of people can do that. It's about like producing results no matter what, basically, and them wanting to be with you and you being a nice person, because you got to hang out. They've got to deal with you. And, you know, if they don't want to know all the things that went wrong, they just want the job done, you know, and you, and they just need photos and they don't want to hear excuses and stuff. So it's just like, make it happen. It's your job to just make it happen.
Yeah. And do you still love doing that?
Yeah. Yeah. Like making it happen or corporate.
Yeah. No, no, making it happen. That thing yeah. is like, there's this kind of mini pressure of like, you know, you've got X amount of hours and you need to just get it done.
Yeah. I feel like that is one of my skills. It's just like problem solving. It's like, actually the paper was a good place to learn that. It's like, I'd get sent a story on apples and sent to do a story on apples and they'd be like, go photograph apples. And you get there and they're like, it's not apple season. There's no apples on the trees. We don't have any apples.
Wow.
Or like strawbale house. And they're like, yeah, we've finished it. There's no strawbales. Like just trying to go, oh, okay, well, how can we find a strawbale and how can we like fake it? And yeah.
Yeah. Wow. That's so interesting.
But I guess it's more planned in commercial stuff. So that doesn't really happen. But I think like as a photographer, you're always like a problem solver. It's like, how are you going to make this look good? And how are you going to show this the best? And they want it to look like this. How are you going to do it? So you're always kind of solving problems. And whether it's like some kind of drama on a shoot, it's just like quickly adapting and going, all right, we've got to make this work today. Today's the day. Everyone's here. How are we going to fix it? Which, I mean, hopefully you plan and things don't go wrong, but that's life. So
I want to move and talk a little bit about your fine art work, which is really visually vibrant and dynamic and very, feels like it pulls from your ability with like product photography and reflective surfaces, but you include nature in there and it's a collaborative process as well. Is that right? Like you work with someone?
Yes. I've had different people, but most of it I do with a friend of mine and we have a little side business, but I actually have a website for it, but no one goes to that website and everyone goes to my website. So I chucked it up on my website as well because I felt like no traffic was coming, but it was called The Weekend Works. We don't shoot as much as I would like. Kids kind of put a bit of a
totally,
you know, wedge in there. And I find I'm one of those people that's really like deadline, deadline, deadline. So then things that aren't deadline drag on. So we shoot something and we put it out there like 2 years later when I get around to actually doing it. But it's really fun. It's with my friend Zoe Hodgins and we worked together. She was at a design firm and I did a bunch of photography for them. And it was really, really fun and we had a good time. And then we were like, how can we do more of this? So they had like fun projects that were for the studio, like obviously got client stuff. But yeah, she'd be like, let's shoot this. And I'm like, no way, we can't do that. And then a week later I'd think about it and be like, okay, no, we can do that. I've figured it out. So I kind of like that her requesting stuff and I'm like, yeah, that's not possible. And then thinking about it and making it possible. So I feel like she has really amazing ideas. If I hear a new idea that's I've never kind of thought of or heard before, I have to like think on it because I'm always like, no, immediately in my brain. So I just kind of talk to her and say, I want to photograph something like this. And then she'll come up with a really amazing concept. I'll freak out and say, we can't do it. And then we'll do it a few months later. So it's kind of like a good, fun process.
It feels like you're problem solving again.
Yeah, it's problem solving. So I kind of like that. It's kind of a challenge. And then it's also really fun when you achieve it, if you know what I mean. So it's kind of like pushing you. And I think when you're doing commercial work, because you do have to produce a result, you have to know what you're doing is going to work. And you might throw in an extra shot here and there that you say, it might work or it might not work. Or sometimes I'll get clients to leave a few bits and pieces behind and I'll just try something out after the shoot. But when we're working together, if we do a shoot day and it doesn't work out, it's disappointing, obviously, because you do all the pre-production and that can take days and you do all the prep, but there's no real massive problem if it doesn't work. So I kind of like to experiment in a way when it doesn't matter if it fails, I guess. And art is a way to do that and side projects. And I often do a lot of test shooting. So if I want to try something out and I'm not sure, like when I started, I would pre-light test shoot everything I was going to shoot. So like,
wow,
I would test everything out on whoever's at home. And even now, like the other day, I wanted to try out a new lighting technique. I was doing portraits for a friend and I just said to her, look, I'm going to spend a bit longer if you don't mind, and I'm just going to try out a few things. So I got my kid to stand in for all the test lighting before she came, so it didn't get ridiculous. So I kind of like trying out stuff if I'm not sure it's going to work before the shoot. And then, and often like techniques I'll do in my art projects, I'll end up using commercially. So actually a lot of the lighting I've used for my art projects then becomes lighting I use commercially, because it's a good opportunity just to have a go,
yeah, wow,
see what happens. You know, not the pressure of a commercial day where you just, I think now clients' budgets are getting tight and they want so much for their money that you have to just shoot so much. So often there isn't time to just fluff around. You've got to be like, this shot, this shot, this shot, this is the lighting, switch it over, keep shooting. So it's like a good opportunity for that for me.
And do you think that the work that you're doing with Zoe or just even other collaborative kind of art projects is a space for you to, as you say, play, but then also bring back some of that into your commercial clients or jobs? Like, I was just thinking wine or whatever, like some of those really interesting, like the way you do shoot products are so, they're really fun and free and light. And I just love, like, you're amazing with color. Like, I just am mind blown the way you can shoot color. But I wonder, like, you can see that kind of thread maybe between the two?
Definitely, definitely. Well, that's kind of I guess I'm doing what I like. So if that makes sense.
Yeah, totally.
You kind of, and then because you're producing something, then people get you for that as well.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. You kind of develop a style and people want that style. So then it kind of, I don't know the right word, self-perpetuating, is that right?
Yeah, yeah.
So it kind of, yeah, like you, and that's another big thing with folio stuff I do. It's kind of like, think like with the art stuff, there's an element of us wanting to say stuff a bit, which we haven't fully explored yet. But then a lot of it is like, what style of work do you want to be doing? So it's a bit of like folio shoots, maybe more so than art, is like, what work do I want? And I'm going to create that work.
Oh, I see. Okay.
And then I guess the art stuff kind of blends a bit, but is different. But I kind of look at it all as personal work. But yeah, the folio work would be more things people wouldn't want to buy and put on their wall.
Yeah.
Whereas obviously the art maybe more so.
I would love to know, I guess, in terms of your career trajectory, like, has it changed at all, or has,
massively,
you know,
yeah.
Yeah. Do you want to talk a bit more
so
about
much.
That?
Yeah. So when I first started out and I was in school and starting uni, thought I wanted to shoot fashion, tried shooting fashion, was very bad at it, worked for a fashion photographer who was amazing and I loved working for, but just realized being in that world that it was not for me and I just don't really care about fashion. And then I felt really burnt out at uni. I was just like, I can't leave uni. I have to continue and finish my course. But I just was so over it and feeling terrible and tired and just wanted a break. So I just went to the library and looked at books and found this book that was like industrial ports in Venice in Italy.
Wow.
Which I still have this book. I actually just bought it recently because I still think about the book all the time. So I was like, I'm ordering this online. That was like only a year or two ago I did that because it just always stuck with me. And so I lived in the city at the time in Spencer Street, and basically no one lived in the city. The Docklands was undeveloped, so it was just the old docks, but they weren't really used. So inspired by this book, I just went to the docks every Sunday morning because no one would really be around to tell you off, and just went in and took photos of everything. And it was really not developed at all then. Like Spencer Street station. You could get up to the tracks there. Like, there was no buildings there at all, like at all. There was nothing. It was just the docks, no apartments.
Wow.
No one around. You could just you could just walk wherever you want. It was all fine. You obviously couldn't go to the actual port area with the shipping containers, but like all the stuff that was not really used. So yeah, I just started taking photos there, and then was like, I just want to shoot industrial stuff. Like, that was my love. I wanted someone to pay me to shoot abandoned buildings, but I was like, that's not going to be a job. And so I was like, maybe industrial stuff could be a job. So, and I also kind of liked architecture as well. So I started to get into architecture because I think Fed Square had just been built and there were some interesting buildings happening around the city. So I'd go around and photograph them, like get permission. Like I chatted to the architects at Fed Square to get permission to photograph it and things like that. So, just used to do stuff around the city and I really enjoyed that. And then I ended up, I started working for some architects and then randomly got a job, like jobs with a heritage architect photographing heritage buildings before they were changed and they'd basically be extremely derelict. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm actually being paid to shoot derelict buildings. This is amazing.
Oh, wow. That's
which
so
is
cool.
So fun. So it was like industrial buildings and car parks, like really random stuff, like air bases and like just crazy, but really gross because they had literally been shut up for years and years. So bird poo everywhere. And sometimes they'd be full of water and then you couldn't go in there and they'd be asbestos riddled. They were not good. And then the industrial sites, you know, you're dressing up in all this protective equipment and covered in gas monitors, or you're in a house that has no power and it's boarded up and there's no lights and you've got to go in there and shoot. So it was always a bit like, oh, is this safe? I don't know, like a bit borderline. And then I got pregnant. So I was like, I can't do that anymore. I don't want to expose myself to this stuff. So thankfully nothing happened. And obviously you take precautions, like you're not crazy about it. Like you try and be careful and you don't touch things and you don't go in areas that are super, like someone's overseeing it. But it always just sat with me a bit like it was a bit dodgy, I guess. Being around mold and poop and, I don't know, gases and things. So, yeah, I stopped that when I got pregnant with my first child. The other thing that also happened in between there, which didn't have an effect straight away, but I moved to Canada for a couple of years and shot mines and industrial stuff over there, but then also got a job with a food photographer who was an architectural photographer. So I found him because he was an architectural photographer and I was like, I'm going to go and work for this architectural photographer. But then by the time I was working for him, he'd stopped doing that and he was just shooting food. So it was like McDonald's burgers and Taco Bell's menu. So like big fast food brand food and then high-end restaurant food, which is all like basically the polar opposite in food shooting terms, but and technique and everything about it. But anyway, so I worked for a couple of years in between doing mining stuff and industrial stuff and corporate stuff over there with this food photographer. So once I got pregnant, I was like, all right, I don't want to do this industrial stuff anymore. I still love shooting architecture, but in summer, going to a sunrise somewhere 2 hours away, very early morning, like quite challenging, very late nights. So you're like going somewhere for sunrise, you're coming back after sunset. I was doing like a lot of corporate events as well, traveling a lot overseas, interstate, like away for a week on a corporate event. So I'm like, this is not going to work with a baby. Like, it's just going to be too hard. So yeah. I was like, I've just got to, I think prior to that, I was just, you know, when you don't have a baby, my husband worked a lot too, don't really have any commitments. You just, I'm going to do whatever I want, work as hard as I can, do exactly what I love because of the sake of loving it at all sacrifice to sleep and all those things. But then obviously getting pregnant, having a baby, you're like, right, now I've got to feed someone. I've got to make dinner. I've got to put them to bed. Like, obviously you can get support with that, but you can't just be like, see you later, baby. I'm going away for a week or, you know,
totally.
You end up with different responsibilities. You're extremely sleep deprived. I ended up moving to Geelong as well because we couldn't afford to buy a house in Melbourne. So moved to Geelong, had a baby. I'm like, right, what am I doing here? So still doing a bit of architecture stuff, quit the corporate traveling, quit the industrial stuff, also heritage stuff because it was a bit sketchy and a lot of work for the money, I guess, time consuming wise, because that's the other factor, you have way less time. So I ended up starting to shoot more product, shooting a fair bit of food and restaurants and things like that, which I really loved. More corporate portraits rather than events, because it was corporate portraits are a bit more civilized timing wise and a bit more planned, and you'd go into Melbourne or something, not, you know, not too far away. But I kind of readjusted, I guess, because I had to fit it in with the baby. So probably worked a little bit too much. I was sort of, I don't know, once my baby was 4 months old, I just kind of worked a lot, did a lot of nighttime working, a lot of weekend working. In hindsight, not ideal, but, you know, you do these things. I ended up outsourcing all my retouching at this point in time as well, because I did not have time to retouch. And then got pregnant with my second baby and went on maternity leave for 4 months, I guess, and then came back and it was pretty much COVID. So.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So it was like I sort of really wanted to get into food at that time and obviously product and booze, and I still like love the architecture stuff. So, yeah, then COVID. So it was, you know, that was a time. There was like
it was a time, and that would be a real time with the toddler and a newborn, but and also yeah. That idea then when, you know, we couldn't do what we do. I mean, that's when I really yeah. started teaching, you know, I moved yeah. into that in COVID. But I think what's really interesting, I'm going to just jump back a little bit, was this idea how you kind of decided to do certain works and then other opportunities popped up and you kind of, you took them on as part of it and you just kept
yeah.
kind of rolling with
yes.
it. And then you were able yes. to feed it back into having a baby and going, actually, I can't do all these gigs. So what can I do? So I could use the skills that I've done working for another photographer in Canada, however yeah. many years prior, you know, and I think that's really,
yeah. yeah.
like flexible and versatile way of working, but also to, I think it does kind of signify how we are in these times. Like you do have to put your best foot forward and do the things you like, but you also need to like draw from all the experiences that you've had and fit it in with the practicalities of life. Like it's not,
yes,
it's not
yes.
just this easy kind of path. Work, like pathway that you go, oh yeah, sure, cool, I'll be a photographer, and then you're like, oh, but I want a baby, or I want to buy a house, or I want to travel. Like, it's just really yes. fascinating to see or to hear. Sorry, I should say that trajectory, and then how they've kind of all these really interesting things have linked back in.
Yeah, totally. And I think you've just got to keep adapting. Like, obviously, when I studied, we went through just straight after the transition from film to digital, and you saw people complaining about how things were and what budgets used to be like and all this kind of stuff. And it's like, yeah, you can complain, but this is life now. So when we shot film, I used to assist a lot of film photographers and shoot film, and you might shoot like 8 shots in a day, maybe 15, I don't know, like if you were doing lifestyle editorial stuff. Or we might shoot a shot and then I'd ride my bike up to the lab, wait for the film to get processed, come back, look at it. You know, leave the setup. Like everything was slower. You did less stuff. Everything took a bit longer. And because you couldn't just keep tweaking stuff, you had to get it right, spend a lot of time. There was less photoshopping, I suppose. So it was just time consuming. And then obviously digital, everyone was like, it's free. There's no film. Obviously it's not, because you've got to update your gear all the time. You then have to work a lot more doing the files or pay to outsource it. So it's so much more expensive than shooting film, I think, because, you know, my first camera was like a 40-year-old camera that the army had that my uncle bought secondhand that I bought off him. Whereas like I'm upgrading digital cameras all the time, laptops all the time.
I spend way too much
money on software subscriptions. It's kind of scary when I look at it. I should reassess. But like, it's really, really expensive. Yeah. So anyway, so there was a bit of a transition where clients learnt that digital is not free, even though there's no film. And then the expectation, because the client can look at it and go, yep, cool, tick, we've done it, move on. The expectations is that you produce more and more work. And then I think we're in another massive transition now where obviously AI is a thing. You know, retouching's adapting. People are expected to do video, which I really need to do more of and get into more. But it's really, we're in another, I reckon this change might be bigger than the change from film to digital, to be honest, because digital was trying to be film. So it was kind of replacing film directly with a new thing. Whereas now it's like, we don't need to just replace film. We can do all this other new stuff. What are we going to be?
Yeah.
So I think in photography, since I've done it, you just have to be really, really adaptable. You have to think, all right, I need to make a living. What can I do to make some money, basically? So you can't just poo-poo stuff because clients want it. I mean, you've got it. You don't want people to take the piss. But in a way, if clients are repeatedly requesting certain things, obviously that's what people want, you know. And you need to value yourself and not do things for nothing because you've got a lot of expenses. But you also kind of just have to adapt to the current environment, I think.
I guess one last question is probably, or maybe two questions. One is, what kind of advice would you have, you know, for someone just starting? And then also, I'd love to hear about what your next thing is on the horizon, if it's a big project or a trip somewhere, or yeah, they're probably the next, those two questions.
So I guess someone starting out, my advice would be just try and connect with as many photographers that are in the area you are interested in as you can, in a way, not like in a superficial way, but like try and get mentors, go and do work experience, go and speak to photographers, because you'll learn so much. Like I assisted for a very long time, probably too long, but I learned so much assisting. And just having people to, because you're kind of by yourself a lot. I was in studios, which was great, but now I'm not. I still fall back on, like, even my, literally my mentor from school, I can call and still talk to her 26 years later or whatever it was, something scary like that. I still ring her and I'm like, what do you think of this? Or what do you think of that? And I'll still catch up with her. And yeah, all my mentors, I still call and I still feel like I can call them out of the blue, even if I haven't spoken to them for 6 months, to say, I'm quitting on this job, what should I do? Or like, I've got to, you know, fly with this equipment. What? How do I pack it so I could get it through airport security? I don't know, just random stuff like.
Oh my gosh, totally. Yes.
Just like those things where you're like, ah, oh, I don't know what to do in this situation. Or if a client's requesting something and you think it's unreasonable, you're not sure, but you can call them. So yeah, I just, having those relationships, like watching people shoot, like you can go and study, but I guess it's the problem solving thing. Things on jobs, weird things can happen and you can watch how the photographer deals with it and you can go, yeah, that's great. Or yeah, no, I'm not going to deal with it like that. Like you kind of get to learn a lot that you can really only learn by being on photo shoots. Mm. And then a lot of my mentors passed me work. So when I first started, I reckon at least 25% of my work came from mentors palming off jobs that they were not available to do, or didn't work with what they were doing. And I've got mentors in really different areas and probably not in my shooting areas, and only because I've transitioned. So like fashion and industrial stuff. So I guess they kind of were in my area of interest at the time, but and it doesn't, I don't think it matters too much if they're in your area or not, because everyone's got their own thing to offer. So I think competition wise, et cetera, it doesn't matter. But yeah, just that's been so good for me for learning stuff, trying out equipment, asking for advice. Like I've got my tech friends that are like crazy tech people that I'm like, what do you think of this thing? You know what I mean?
Yeah. Or new gear that comes out. It's like, is it worth me upgrading? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I kind of feel like I've got all these photographers that I know that are part of my network, and I will help them by the same, you know, I've got photographers that can call me almost any time and I'll answer questions for them. You know, it's like what goes around comes around sort of thing. But just having those industry relationships to learn, because you can learn all this stuff at uni, but there's a lot more to learn than what you could learn at uni that you can only really learn by doing on the job. So
yeah, that's great advice. I think
finding mentors, like going and doing work experience and finding mentors.
Yeah, great. And what's next?
What's next? I don't know what's next. I feel like I'm just trying to build things up again, really. Loving doing product stuff, loving doing brew stuff, want to do more art. I'm actually finally making a separate corporate and medical center website, which is a bit random, but I shoot a lot of architecture for medical centers. I don't know why. Like, it's just a thing right now. And I'm like, and then they're getting other photographers to shoot their portraits. And they're like, I've shot randomly for a lot of like medical people, like shots of their studio or whatever, their surgery, and their space and their people and them practicing. So I'm like, why are these medical centers getting another photographer in to do all that stuff when they could get me? So I'm like, I need to make a website for this. So,
yeah. Okay.
Yeah, because I love doing that stuff as well. I love the studio, crazy detailed lighting stuff where we spend ages creating concepts and sets and things. And I also love doing that other stuff as well. So, yeah, I think for me, it's been a lot busier this year, which has been awesome. And I just want to build it up more, I think. And then both my kids are going to be in school next year. So I'm like, 5 days a week, need to be busy.
Oh, the freedom. Except the crunch of 9:30 till 3 is kind of.
Yeah. We've got the before and after school care, thankfully, which excellent. I use heavily. Yeah. I'm like a big user of that. So my kids are good at long days. So I guess, yeah, that sort of stuff, really. Nothing crazy exciting. Just, yeah.
Well, thank you so much for your time. That sounds really great. And I think I love this idea of problem solving, but also just being adaptable and flexible. I think there's some really great kind of tips and nuances in that, but also to see your career kind of get bigger and grow and shift has been lovely. So thanks so much for your time.
No worries. Thanks heaps, Pia.
Out of the Frame is produced by Pia Johnson, music by Steph O'Hara, and graphic design by Brent Leadovitz.